Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I'm Tori.
Hey, I'm Puma. We're glad that you joined us today.
Yes, welcome back.
We are in our Names of God series.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Names of God.
Names of God.
Yeah, I this is one of my favorite series to teach through, to go over with you. What a great and just really meaningful series. Because our theme verse, Puma, comes from Psalm.
Theme verse from Psalm 9:10, you know, it says that those who know your name will trust in you, for you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you, which is just such an amazing promise, you know, that God promises to not let go of us, to not cast us aside. He's not going to let go of our hand when we fail or when we succeed. That he says, if you seek me, I will never forsake you. But you can't seek someone that you don't know, and you can't trust somebody that you don't know. And so many places in the Bible, God shares different names or titles that sometimes he calls himself, sometimes people call him, which today our title El Roy is a name that someone in the Bible called him El Roy. And so we'll get into that in a moment. But for you and I, Tori, I think for all of us, we all want to be noticed, right? You know, we want people to notice us. You know, we're doing a podcast and it's like, oh, I'd love for people to notice it, right? And I've had moments in my life, and maybe, you know, you all have too, where you've been with a group of people, been in a crowd or been somewhere, but you felt very, very lonely.
Well, I mean, in a world where everybody is online, there's so much social media, and yet everybody feels so alone. Everybody feels so overlooked, even though everyone's looking at their quote, you know, real life, and it's usually a facade. But yeah, everyone wants to be noticed.
Yeah, everyone wants to be noticed. I want people to notice me, right? I post something and I'm disappointed if nobody sees it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I post something that I think is super cool and no one seems to care about what I care about or what's going on with me. And, you know, in a world where we have so much social media and so many opportunities, and you know, whether it's school, work, play, neighbors, family, social interactions, and yet often people feel very alone, feel like nobody cares, nobody understands. I'm all, you know, and is there anyone that actually sees or knows or understands or cares or hears what I'm me?
Right. Or sees me for me, right? That they see what I do, they see what I post. But again, I think most people probably feel like, well, yeah, they see through me, or they see me as a resource.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just a resource.
Oh, this person's popular. I'm going to tag you in my photo.
Just a commodity. I don't know if they do this today in grade school, but I remember when I was a kid, like in third and fourth grade, have PE, and they'd always pick a captain, right? Hey, you cool kid over here. You cool kid over here. Now pick kids. And what did you not want to be?
The last one.
You don't want to be the last one picked because they had the big L loser on your forehead, right?
Yeah, it's kind of rough when you're homeschooled, but...
Yeah, right? The homeschool.
You're always the last kid in your class.
You're always the last kid in your class. Yeah, but, you know, we just... You know, and so this is how we typically see people today, based upon what they can do or what they have or their significance to me or their value to me or either, you know, if they're successful or whatever. But, you know, we don't want to be attached to a loser.
Oh, right. Yeah. We don't associate with people of lesser status or people that really aren't hip or cool or you know, don't have the pizzazz that the other kid does, the popular kid.
Yeah.
We see a lot of our worth through how we're seen.
Yeah.
You know, and if I only got 10 likes and Susie got, you know, 200, well, she clearly has more worth than I do because she got noticed more. And it's a hard world. It's a world that is competing for a false view of who people really are.
Yeah. And so the name of God today, El Roy, you know, comes out of a situation in the Old Testament. And honestly, all the names of God, I enjoy them all. Each one has a different thing. But this one, over the years, it's such a... I don't know, I think a really significant one, if we really could grasp, you know, the heart of God behind this name. I think for me, it really has helped me, and I hope maybe that it will help you too today.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's dive into this new name of God, El Roy. Okay, Puma. So El Roy, it comes from Genesis 16, right? And this is a story. You want to walk us through the story as we kind of unwrap this beautiful name?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's in the Old Testament. You have you know, Noah and the flood and yep. all that, right? And
then, that Noah guy.
And then, you know, his sons afterwards, and they repopulate the earth and the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, and God scatters the people. Genesis 12, he picks some dude named Abram. We know him as Abraham. And says, hey, I'll be your God, you and your descendants will be my people, and I promise that your descendants will be as numerous as the stars of the sky, the sand of the seashore. And this guy, we'll just call him Abraham. For, yeah. You know, he was a super old dude. His wife was super old and barren. They had no kids. Mm. And yet God said, you know, I'm going to, through you, you know.
Yeah, through your family.
Through your family, through you and your wife, Sarah, I'm going to bless the world. I'm gonna rescue the world through you and your family. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, I'm an old man. I mean, my wife is beyond the age of bearing children, and this just doesn't make sense. So fast forward a few chapters, decades gone by, and they haven't had a kid. So now are they not only old, they are older than old. Yeah. So they're getting older than old. And God promised, and nothing is happening. Mm. And so his wife, Sarah, you know, has an Egyptian handmaiden named Hagar. And she's young and fertile. And so, you know, part of the custom of the day, you know, to have a family line through someone else, a family name. And so she's like, well, you know what, Abraham, why don't I give you my handmaiden as another wife, and you can bear a son through her. And Abraham's like, oh, okay, I guess. And so that's what happens, you know. And sure enough, Hagar becomes pregnant. Mm-hmm. And she becomes pregnant, and you know, just as the narrative goes in Genesis 16, Hagar starts. I don't know how this would work, but kind of mocking Sarah. I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. You're not. Yada yada. Whatever. Right. And Sarah obviously is hurt by that, and so what she wants to do is to get rid of Hagar, kick her out, and send her off. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in those days, Abraham became a very wealthy man.
Yeah.
Hagar is just an Egyptian maidservant.
Yeah, she's a slave girl.
She's a slave girl. She has no family. She has no possessions. She's in a foreign land. She's not in Egypt. And she now is pregnant, and Sarah kicks her out of the household. And so she basically has resolved that she's going to just go out somewhere and die, right?
Yeah. Well, and she goes out and dies because Sarah, right? She becomes indignant and starts really mistreating her because of Hagar's called boasting or bragging.
Right. Yeah. And so the whole situation, it's not, I mean, you know, you and I found ourselves in situations, you know, sometimes our choices, sometimes choices made around us where all of a sudden we're just caught and not sure, you know, what to do or how to do it, and just circumstances, just feeling miserable. Or we're in a situation where you feel like people are using us, and this is certainly what was happening with Hagar. I mean, Hagar didn't ask for this.
No.
I mean, she's not asking, hey, you know, can I, you know, bear a son through you? She's not asking for that.
She's not asking to sleep with her masters.
Right. Yeah, you know, so she's just being used, right? Mm. Just being used. And I'm sure she probably, you know, felt that. Yeah. You know, and I'm sure, you know, all of us have felt that at times where people around us just treat us, our usefulness. Mm-hmm. But if we're not useful, if we're not fun anymore, whatever, people just kind of, you know, move on.
Yeah, I'm worthless. I have no more purpose. There's nothing good about me if people don't need me.
So Sarah is saying, I'm moving on from you, Hagar, get out of here. And so she leaves. And where does she go? What does she have? She has absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so just to get this straight, the picture is we have this Egyptian slave girl who has been mistreated by Sarah, and she flees to the desert. So she's pregnant. She is a foreigner. She's a slave and has nothing, to the desert.
Right.
I mean, what's in the desert?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, it just, her situation is very bleak.
Hmm.
Very bleak. And in the grand scheme of things, in the history of the world, I mean, who is she? And what is she? Very insignificant.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, just a face in the crowd of humanity, you know. So, you know, faces. Everyone is just a face in a crowd.
Yeah.
Everyone just, and this was Hagar. And so she's out there. And what's so interesting is it says that the angel of the Lord found her near a spring in the desert. And he said, Hagar, where have you come from and where are you going? And she said, I'm running away from my mistress. And the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. Now, that sounds like God's being super cruel.
Yeah, right. It says that Sarah was treating her harshly. She was mistreating Hagar, and God says, go back to this person who mistreated you.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's continue and see if God is really being mean. You know, he says, go back and submit to her. I will so increase your descendants that they too will be too numerous to count. Isn't that amazing? I mean, God says, no, you're not going to die out here. In fact, you know, your child is going to create a lineage for you that your descendants, I mean, that's kind of the same thing that he said to Abraham. Right. Abraham,
you'll be a mighty nation. Your kids are going to be huge.
You know, and then he says to her also, he says, now you are with child. Well, how does God know? And you will have a son. And you shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. And it's interesting, that name Ishmael means, that God hears.
Yeah, that God hears you.
God hears. Name him God hears, because I have heard of your misery. Just think about that. I mean, who is she to God?
Yeah, she's not even, a Israelite. Yeah, she's just a slave Egyptian girl.
I mean, who is she in the scope of human history? I mean, think about all the people that have lived throughout history and are alive today on the earth, and the significance of any one individual. I mean, who is she? She's the one that nobody thinks about. She's the one that nobody cares about. And maybe, for you, maybe you have felt that was you.
Yeah.
Right?
You're just used. No one cares about you.
My life really has no grand significance.
Yeah.
And no one really cares. And the Lord says, I have heard of your misery, and says, your son will be a wild donkey of a man, which is kind of a fun description. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. Oh, that doesn't sound super flattering. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers.
Okay, this dude is a wild man.
So through him, you'll have descendants as numerous, too numerous to count, he says. And then this is so great. This is Hagar's response. It says, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. She said, you are Elroy, the God who sees me.
Wow.
This is what Elroy means. It means the God who sees. And it's not that God is just kind of up there like at a big theater where he's up in the balcony just kind of watching the play unfold.
He's not a cosmic creeper.
No, he's not up there just kind of looking out. The idea behind the God who sees me is the God who is looking out for me. You know, it's not that I just see somebody in a crowd, but it is I am looking out for and caring for the one that I see.
Yep.
And that's the idea behind this name, Elroy, that to the world and even, to us today, Hagar, I mean, if this wasn't in the Bible, she would just be a nameless person in human history and insignificant, like so many people feel.
Yeah.
And yet God really just is highlighting, no, even Hagar, the least of the least of the day, and the Lord hears her and he sees, he is looking out for her.
Yeah. Well, how interesting that this Hagar, right? Again, not part of God's people, right? And not an Israelite. And yet God, he saw her misery. So he's watching her for a while. I mean, he knew everything that she was feeling, and she goes to the desert probably to die with her child. And then I love how she says, I have seen the Lord. When you see God, you die. And yet she goes to the desert to die. She just had an encounter with Almighty God. And rather than death, he gives life. And not just to her and her son will give, be a mighty nation. I mean, the contrast, you met with God, people usually die, and yet God gives life when she was probably seeking death.
Yeah, so why would God care about Hagar?
Wow, that's a great question.
I mean, why would he care about it? What does she bring to the table?
Yeah, well, to God, nothing.
I mean, the way we think of people today, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the way we think about people, the way we treat people, we value people and their significance based upon what they bring to the table.
Right.
What do you contribute?
Right.
Yeah. What do you have? Or are you going to make my life better? Are you going to, make this group better? If not, go away. I mean, that's how people feel today, how we think today about stuff. And we've experienced this personally, moments where I'm that person that seems to be the odd man out that nobody, nobody sees or nobody wants.
Right.
So who is Hagar to God?
Yeah. Well, on paper, it looks like Hagar, not significant. but to Almighty God, Yahweh, to El Roy, I mean, yeah. she was made in the image of God.
Right. And, you know, what a statement where she says, you are the God who looks after me. Mm. You are the God who has been watching me. And this is why he says to go back to Sarah, because otherwise she would die, mm-hmm. right? And God is going to do a work in Abraham and Sarah's hearts, right? She's going to go mm-hmm. back, and Ishmael is going to grow up in the household, and you know, there's more to the story,
yeah.
right? God's not saying go back to an abusive situation and correct. Just suck it up, buttercup. I mean, that's not, he's saying, no, this is how I'm going to provide for you, because you have nothing, and it's going to be okay. And I'm going to watch over you even in that household and take care of you and your son.
Yeah.
And she's like, wow, this is the God. I'm going to call you Elroy, the God mm-hmm. who sees, the God who is looking out after me.
Yeah. How beautiful. I love how this name of God highlights, again, just the compassionate, tender, gentle, and merciful side of God. You know, last time we met, we went over El Elyon, right? God Most High. And we mentioned these verses here in Psalm 121. And I'm going to read this chapter. It's 8 verses, but this highlights the beauty, especially coming out of that name of God last time. So Psalm 121, I look up to the mountains, and where does my help come from? My help comes from Yahweh, who made the heaven and earth. Again, the idea of wealth and power and authority comes from a high place. But check out verses 3-8. This is, I love this chapter. The writer continues, he, being God, will not let you stumble. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over you never slumbers or sleeps. Verse 5, for the Lord, Yahweh himself, watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon at night. The Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. In the last verse, the Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forevermore. I mean, Elroy sees, he sees you. He sees the quote, insignificant you. He doesn't use you. I mean, again, most of the Bible, especially Old Testament, especially, centers around Israel and what God does through this nation, how he blesses the nations through him. And God has always been pro-life, pro-Gentile. But this is just almost like an odd story. I mean, it's important because this is, you know, Ishmael is a half-son of Abraham. But Hagar, just one slave of many who has been mistreated, was used, and God sees her. What does that say about the value God has for people, for life? For women, especially, again, God has always loved ladies and women, and yet in this culture, women were so insignificant.
Right.
This story would shake the sandals of those reading it back in the Bible times, because women, unfortunately, meant very little to people, and yet God saw the insignificant ones.
Yeah, it really is amazing. He sees in order to care for, you know, he sees to look after. He's yeah. not seeing from afar. He sees up close, and he desires to do something about it. And it really reminds me of in the New Testament with Jesus. I mean, we see all the names of God. We see the heart of each name of God manifested in Jesus in the New Testament. One of my favorite New Testament narratives is in Luke 7, the widow of Nain. And we may have mentioned that before. It's always on my heart.
Partly
because the day starts out that Jesus leaves Capernaum and walks, you know, probably 4 or 5 hours down to Nain. And it just so happened that day that a widow who, obviously a widow, so she has no husband, and her only son dies. Mm-hmm. And in that culture, that means she is going to be destitute. I mean, mm-hmm. she has no inheritance, no nothing, no family name, no nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, that she was like kind of the bottom rung. And so the widow, the only son of a widow, her son dies that day. And so they take them out of the city that day. And so you have this big entourage following Jesus. And then you have all the entourage of this little town city coming out. And they happen to meet as they're exiting the city gate and Jesus is coming in. And I love what it says. You have probably 1,000+ people all coming together. Right? Mm. And it says, as Jesus approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord Jesus saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, don't cry. And as the narrative goes on, Jesus actually raises this widow's deceased son back to life.
Wow.
What's fascinating to me about this is she's not asking for it. She didn't do anything to deserve it. It doesn't say that she was a righteous woman. It doesn't say she was a wicked woman. All it says is that she was in great need, and that, especially in that culture, and in a large crowd, out of that whole large crowd of what's going on, the hustle and bustle and the noise and everything, Jesus saw her and didn't just see her say, oh, that's, wow, look at that. Let's post some pictures on social media about that. That's crazy. Yeah. No, he didn't see her to post about it. He saw her so he could do something about it.
Yeah.
He saw her need and his heart went out to her. That is the heart of Elroy that we see so clearly in the life of Jesus. And, you know, we see this in Jesus all over the Gospels, you know, because this is the heart of our God. He's a God who sees in order to care and do something about it.
Yeah.
And which is just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's like a protective oversight. He loves us. He loves people. And he's invested. He saw Hagar. He saw the widow of Nain. And yeah, that's a great point. All these names of God are so highlighted and expounded upon in Jesus' life. Jesus never did not live out this heart of God, that he sees us. He loves us. He watches over us because he loves us. How amazing. That is so cool.
Yeah. You know, so when we think about you and I and how we see ourselves, right? How we think other people see us, do we think about how God sees us? Because often when I think about how God sees me, I think mainly just because of my sin. He sees me as a sinner.
Right.
He sees me as somebody that has failed and whatnot. And right. I like, well, what do I bring to the table? You know, what do I, you know, in that, often I think that God's love for me is contractual. If I can bring something good to the table,
right,
then he will see me and care about me because that's how we experience life. Mm-hmm. But that's not the heart of God and all the names of God. You know, he is not a contractual loving God. Mm-hmm. He is a God who delights in showing mercy.
Yeah.
He is a God who desires to not just watch and observe, but to hear, to understand, and to see in order to care and do something about it. Right. That's the heart of God. And so when you think about this idea that, you know, God sees me, you know, does that bring excitement and comfort, or does it bring fear?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great AQ.
I mean, yeah, like, so, like, which, you know, does it fill my heart with worship, or do I get worried? Oh no, God sees me. I'm trying to hide or cover up.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the original, you know, kind of theme verse, Psalm 9:10. Do we trust the heart of God? Because those who know his name will put their trust in him, right? Because he doesn't forsake those who seek him. Right. And I love that. Yeah. When we really understand that the God of the Bible, his Elroy, he sees us. Does that bring us worry or worship? And yeah, so how will we respond, right? I mean, how does Hagar respond?
Because even in my sin, right? I mean, yeah, I, you know, like when we were kids, I don't want my dad to find out, right?
Yeah,
right. I did something wrong. Always I don't want my dad to find watching. Out. Well, why do we have fear with that? Well, because we don't want punishment. Mm. But often, you know, a loving father, you know, punishes or disciplines because of they love us, but they don't cast us aside. Right. You know, they still keep us as their child. Mm. You know, that God sees me. Mm. He sees everything about me, you know, which also means he sees all my sin,
right,
which is actually a good thing because then he knows all that needs to be dealt with and forgiven, that he casts all my sin because he sees all my sin in his loving heart as a way to deal with all my sin in a way that I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, so God is one to run to, not one to run from. You know, he sees to care. He doesn't see to cast judgment and disdain to throw us away. And Hagar is just one of those examples in the Old Testament where you see, because she has no significance really, other than she is loved by her Creator, even though in the culture and in the world at that time, she had really not much significance otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and if Yahweh thinks you're significant, then you have the most significance. And yeah, that's really cool that God sees us.
Yeah. So today, you know, when you think about God, Elroy, the God who sees you, if that brings you encouragement, why are you encouraged by that? If the thought of that God sees you today, and that fills your heart with fear, why are you fearful?
Mm.
You know, for us to really take stock at why do we or why do we not want God to see us, and how does He want us to respond to that? You know, does He want us to run from Him, or should we run to Him?
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, thank you, Puma. And thank you guys for joining us. Man, how blessed are we that God sees us? You know, I hope you have been encouraged. I know I have. I love highlighting and focusing on God's character. And I'm not sure who said it, but you know, I heard this once and it's really stuck with me. Yeah, the quote goes, if you are reading the Bible and it doesn't convict you, you're not reading it correctly. And if you read the Bible and it doesn't fill you with hope and joy, you're not reading all of it. Because the meta-narrative story of God and His character, yes, He is a holy and just God, but He loves you. He sees you. And if we trust that, that'll change our lives. So yeah, thank you guys for joining us. And thank you, Puma, for this other new diving into the name of God. And friends, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach us at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. We would love to touch base with you guys and hear from you. And just overall, celebrate what God's doing in your life, because we serve a great God. We'll see you next time, Fridays at 10:10, guys. Until then, bye.
Yep, bye-bye.